This is a special episode for voting in 2024. Many people get to the ballot, and after they vote for the general election for president and even senators and congressmen, they have some questions about the propositions that are up for election. So what we're going to do is go through each of those propositions, and I'm just going to give you a rundown of what we believe. So if you align with our principles and objectives that we've talked over the show, you may align with what we feel about the propositions. First one is Proposition 133. It's a proposed amendment for the Arizona Constitution relating to primary elections. I'm voting no on that. The second one is Proposition 134. It's a proposed amendment to the Arizona Constitution related to initiatives for the referenda, and I'm voting yes on that. The third one is 135, an amendment to the Arizona Constitution by the legislature relating to the governor, that is restricting the governor's executive authority in times of emergency, and I am voting yes to restrict their authority. Proposition 136 relates to ballot measures, and I am voting yes regarding that. Proposition 137 is regarding judicial terms, and that is eliminating judicial terms. I'm voting that we ought to keep those judicial terms, so no on 137. Proposition 138 is relating to wages, giving restaurants more liberty to pay servers, a little bit less in minimum wage because the tips make up the difference, and I'm voting yes on that. Proposition 139 is in relation to abortion, giving a constitutional right in the Arizona Constitution, a right to an abortion. I'm voting no on that. Proposition 140 is related to the elections regarding primaries. I'm voting yes on that. I believe that there should be open primaries. Proposition 311 is regarding the first responders' ability to receive $250,000 in case they die in the line of duty. I'm voting no. I think that private insurance is the way to go on that, and not government-supported benefits that are written into law. Proposition 312 refers to property tax. I'm voting yes on that. Proposition 313 is in relation to child sex trafficking. Of course, of an important issue, it is going to increase the criminal penalties for individuals that get convicted of this crime. I'm voting yes on that measure. Proposition 314 is regarding individuals that apply for government benefits using false identification that are not in the country legally and having criminal penalties applied to them, as well as the sale of fentanyl, and I'm voting yes on that. Proposition 315 is relating to legislative rulemaking, and I'm voting yes on that. Hopefully that's helpful to you. I think that if you want to spend more time on that, that would be a wonderful idea. The book that I used is What's on My Ballot. This is a pamphlet that you should have received in the mail. Unfortunately, they have references in here to websites that should give you additional assistance or provide this electronically. I used those links, and all they did was provide me the link to the DMV or the MVD, and that wasn't helpful at all. So hopefully you get one of these in the mail and you use that to be more educated on the ballots that you vote for.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson. Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Welcome to another edition of Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner, attorney with Deason, Garner, and Hanson. I'm in studio here with Adam Hanson, and Martine is with us running the boards. So I want to get started off today with a little story about my scripture study with my kids last night. Each night we study a portion of the scriptures, and the portion that we were studying last night was about tithing. So there was a little story that went along with it that this child wanted a cat from the cat store. And of course, they didn't live in Yuma because there's a bazillion cats for free in Yuma. But either way, probably ought to edit that out.
It's cats everywhere.
Because there's cat lovers.
It's a global epidemic.
There's
to all those cat lovers out there that are going to cancel us for that comment. Anyway, there was a cat that this child liked, and it was $10. And the mom said, do you have $10? Nope. Okay, so let's go home. Why don't you earn $10, and then you can come back and buy the cat. So they go home, and the mom gives the child chores, washing windows, doing the dishes, vacuuming, setting the table, basically contributing to the family chores and being a productive member. At the end, the child earns $10 and goes back to the pet store and then realizes that she needs to pay tithing. She needs to pay one of the $10, 10%, to the Lord for tithing. And she gives the mom the dollar and says, this is for the Lord. This is to give back to him. And I'm not going to be able to afford the cat. And she goes, well, if you do this right now, you have to go home without the cat. And the child makes the decision, and it's the correct one, and they go home without the cat. So I asked my kids, other than that, did the child make the right decision? And of course, them in that easy situation where they're not the one wanting the cat, they said yes. Of course, it's harder when you're the one wanting that object and faced with the dilemma whether or not to pay back to your religious organization. Tithing is 10% for a lot of churches, but it could be whatever you're able to contribute for other churches. And I think it's very important, an important law of finance, that you give back to the Lord first, because he's given us everything. The other thing that I wanted to point out that my kids brought up was the more important thing that child learned was contributing to the family. They learned washing windows was important. Helping out with dishes was important. Vacuuming was important. Yeah, they got some money from it, but that was kind of a byproduct of the lessons that they learned to contribute to the house. And they all kind of pointed out that the money was going to come and go, whether it was for a cat or candy or something else. But the lessons that they learned in developing that work ethic were going to stay with them. And that's something that our clients, Adam, always ask us to draft into their trust, something that is going to help their children be productive members of society when they receive their inheritance. And the reality is there's no trust provision that we can draft that's going to take a child that has not been trained and brought up correctly through life to become automatically a productive member because of the terms of the trust. So that's on us as parents to train our children that it's not about getting the most money for the least amount of work. It's about learning how to work and gain the most amount of skills that contribute back to society and develop you as an individual. That's what life is about, and that's why we've been placed on earth. What's your take on that?
No, I agree with you. What you mentioned that we were going to talk about propositions.
Oh.
So leading up to this show, Sean's like, I want to talk about the propositions coming up on the ballot because we're getting close to the election day.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I, you've already voted, I believe, right?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. But you've got your ballot.
I don't actually. I didn't receive it yet.
Really?
Yeah.
It must be some fraud.
Some ballot harvester out there took it.
I sent mine in yesterday. But Sean has this book here. That's why when you asked me my take on what you just talked about, what's the connection here?
Well, the connection is I'm reading through these comments, and it's quite obvious to me that individuals that are voting one way or another have an agenda as to what they want the government to do for them. And my philosophy is the government is there to keep people from infringing upon my rights, not to do anything proactively for me, but to keep bad actors out of my way.
Sure.
And they are the number one bad actor. So to keep out of my
way. The
government? Yeah, myself, okay. Right? So the propositions, I look at that in that context. I always have a three-pillar test to whether or not a law should be enacted. That is, is it necessary to preserve my liberty? Is it necessary to preserve my property? Is it necessary to preserve my life? If it's not necessary to preserve any of those three things from infringements by other individuals, then it's not a proper law. We should be reliant on our own contributions and our own charitable dispositions to work in society and produce, not to have the government that doesn't produce anything take from one person and provide to another.
I think we've been coddled in our society, in the American culture, to believe that the government is responsible for promulgating our rights. And I think if we couch this discussion, when you go into the ballot box, I like to think of who actually gives me my rights. And that would be our creator, right? Our supreme creator, God.
Right.
So we are born free. And that's what our founders reiterated in our founding documents, that we are children of God, that He gives us our rights to be free, and that the government is really only there for us to delegate some power to, with the expectation that we can continue to do those other things that you talked about, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we've talked about this before on our show, and Sean, I think it's really important to bring up, because when you're going into the ballot box, I want you to think of that. You know, does this limit government to the extent that I can be freer out of my life? Or is this necessary, this law that I'm voting for, this proposition, is it going to allow me to continue to go to work every day? And if I couldn't go to work, or I didn't need to worry about going to work and providing for my family, I could go out and do this, you know, and I won't be infringed on anybody else's rights. Therefore, I need to delegate this particular power or this authority to the government so that they can do it for me, so that I can free up time to go to work and provide for my family. That's really what the police is about, the police or the executive branch is about, right?
Right.
I don't have time to go looking for bad guys during my day. So I say, okay, I'll delegate a little bit of my authority to the executive branch so that they can send out the police, and the police are patrolling every day, because I don't have time to go to work and patrol the neighborhoods.
Absolutely.
Would you say that's
absolutely
pretty close?
The government isn't there to bring me food or to give me money or to build me a house or to provide me a job. The government is there to make sure that the people that would prevent me from doing that or taking my property are, they have some criminal penalties, that they are violating God-given right that is supported and written in the Constitution. We talk all of the time about constitutional rights. Well, actually, the Constitution says we have all the rights. The Constitution isn't a document that gives citizens rights. It's a document that limits the government from infringing upon all of our rights, which are God-given, and hems in the government from taking away any of those rights, some that are written down specifically. But just because they're not written down doesn't mean they're not given to us. There are 10 specifically in the Bill of Rights that are written down, but those are only by way of example. Those aren't a comprehensive overview of all of our rights.
So having said that, I think for you listeners, or you that are watching this on YouTube or whatever, wherever you get your podcasts, we are Arizona-based. We practice law in Arizona. And so the discussion we're going to have this morning or today is about Arizona propositions. I would venture to guess that you have a slate of propositions in your own particular state or jurisdiction, wherever you are, and they're going to be very similar to some of ours, because what we find is that you have these organizations that tend to go state to state nationwide and try to impose their particular agenda on that particular state. And so there might be some very similar propositions in your state. What I was surprised about, Sean, was if you don't read this very closely, you might miss it, but a lot of these propositions are trying to amend our actual state constitution, the Arizona Constitution. When I see that, that's kind of like a red flag to me. Amending our constitution is much more invasive than, let's say, a statute.
And I like statutes a lot more than amending the constitution, because it goes with the flow of society a lot smoother. When you amend the constitution, you can have maybe a loud majority in there at the time that amends it in a way that is maybe not proper for future generations, and it's very, very difficult to go back in and change it without a supermajority again.
It's very difficult. And so when I see an amendment to the Constitution proposed as a proposition, I'm automatically, and this is just me, I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm automatically, by nature, skeptical of, it's got a high bar in my mind. It's got to be something very fundamental, a very fundamental protection that it's going to offer us from the government in order for it to be ingrained in our Constitution. Save that, then I would rather see it as a statute. So I might even not, I might vote no on a proposition, even if it seems really good And I really agree with it.
Yeah.
Just because
there
it's going to amend our Constitution as opposed to...
They sound great on the surface.
Yes. And they would be good if they're done through statute means as opposed to amending our Constitution. So something to think about when you're going through and thinking about these you're reviewing. In Arizona, they send out these little flyers. So Sean's got the full booklet. I don't know what I did with mine. I got that like a month and a half ago.
You read it, committed it to memory, and then voted.
Right. No. But I did go through it, and I circled all the things that I was going to do. And then I got this other little pamphlet. It's like a one-page sheet. Looks like a newspaper that has a breakdown of all the propositions. So I would encourage you to look through those. And when you're looking through that, be very cognizant about, is this amending my Constitution, the state Constitution, or is it just amending or creating a new statute? Statutes are easier to adjust than the amendments to Constitution. So those are some basic principles that Sean and I have. We've discussed it, and I don't vote just because Sean says something doesn't mean I'm going to vote for it yet, you know, and vice versa.
Is the operative term, because usually when I tell you about it enough, I educate you to the extent that you understand
thank you. That's correct.
I have the proper position.
That's true.
Okay.
Having said that, but I do, Sean and I tend to align a lot on some of these issues and how we're going to vote. Not all the time, and maybe that will bear out in our conversation here, but I think as we've had this conversation just now, we kind of go looking at this through a principled lens, and these are our principles. They might not be your principles, but these are the principles that I use when I go to the ballot box or when I'm reviewing a proposition or voting for a candidate. These are the principles. Maybe I don't like that candidate personally. Maybe he's ugly or she's ugly, or maybe they, you know, don't speak the way that I like.
Yeah, I think that's one of the major reasons RFK isn't on the presidential ballot right now. I had to drop out just because people had a hard time understanding him because of his throat
issue. His voice,
issue.
Yeah, I've heard people say, I can't stand to listen to him. I get used to it after a little while. You know, I don't really care about that, but maybe some people, it's just abrasive enough to... So I don't really care about the characteristics of that person. And one thought that I've had recently, Sean, is that, like, we have such a divide, and you talked about this with Nancy, Susan Sorensen a couple weeks ago on this podcast, where we were talking about the great divide between parties or ideologies, and this, I feel like it's so focused on that individual, whether it's Biden, Kamala, or Trump, and their personality. And the thought is, like, if I'm going to vote for Kamala or I'm going to vote for Trump, then I think that they're perfect. And that's not the case. Like, I don't care about the person necessarily. I care about the policies. And I'm willing to elect a person if they're going to maintain principles that I agree with, because I recognize that they're not perfect. Nobody's perfect. And I'm not looking for perfection in a person. We're never going to find that. So I look for policies and principles. And so having said that, that's how we kind of couch or look at these propositions. We actually have to go to a break. So now,
coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Want to hear more Life, Death, and the Law? You can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, or any other platform you listen to your podcasts.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm attorney Adam Hanson. I've got my partner Sean here. We were talking about in the last segment the upcoming propositions here in Arizona. We're Arizona-based attorneys, and so we're talking a lot on this show about Arizona-specific propositions. I'm willing to bet if you're listening to this or watching this in a different jurisdiction or forum, that you're going to have very similar propositions in your state. There tends to be this push for organizations throughout the United States to thrust upon all the states their agendas. And so we've seen in the last, decade or 15 years, outside money here in Arizona coming in to push different legislation propositions. And so I'm always wary of that kind of stuff. And having said that, one of the first propositions, Sean's looking up a hot topic one that he wants to talk about.
So they're very mundane and I think kind of benign ones, and there are others that are very, very significant. So I'll start at the top of the list of the ones that I think are most significant. Number one is Prop 139. Now, I want to say it in a way that is easier for the listeners to remember this when you're voting. Think 139, 39 weeks, because this is about abortion. And what they want to do is amend the Constitution for Arizona to make abortion a constitutional right, rather than allowing voters to vote each term whether or not what restrictions.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hansen, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row. You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hansen, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. We're talking about the ever-exciting topic of propositions that we get a vote for. Now, this is the point in the ballot when you're going down, you vote for, you know, the president, you vote for the senators, and you vote for your representatives, and then you get to the propositions, and a lot of people, they don't know. They're not well informed about the proposition. So that's the purpose of this show, and we apologize in advance if it's a little bit dry. But this one is a very interesting one. It talks about term limits. Now, I'm a huge advocate.
On judges. On Arizona judges, right?
Yes. So I'm a huge advocate of term limits in general. I think that there should be maximum 12 years of service, regardless of the position in the federal government that it is.
Yeah.
So whether it's a Supreme Court judge, whether it's a senator, because right now there's no term limits on senators, whether it's a congressperson, no term limit on congressmen and women, and so it's only on the president. And we've found that it's highly effective in keeping that balance of power equal with the president, but we've got these senators that are in there for life, and they wield tremendous amount of power. We need to put term limits on them. Well, this allows us to get a little bit close. Well, we currently are closer to that in Arizona. Right now in Arizona, there are term limits on judges. So if you're a trial court judge, it's every 6 years. It's every 4 years if you're a trial court judge, and if you are an appellate court judge, it's every 6 years. So let me just give you a little breakdown as to what a trial court and appellate court judge is. The superior court, that's where 95% of the cases are heard and decided. That is a trial court judge, and those judges are elected every 4 years. An appellate court judge would be the Court of Appeals of Arizona or the Supreme Court of Arizona. Those are both appellate court judges. Those are state courts. And although we hear a lot about the Supreme Court of the United States, a fraction of the cases actually go to either federal courts or the Supreme Court of the United States. 99% of the cases that affect us every day happen in state courts, and 95% of those happen in trial courts. And so we want to have accountability of our trial court judges and make sure they get elected every 4 years. This proposition, this 137, would eliminate the requirement that they run for re-election every 4 years. And I think that's ridiculous. I don't understand why anybody would want less accountability for those judges, somebody serving for the public benefit.
And in addition to that, this only affects counties with more than 250,000 people. So really, this is focused on Maricopa County in Arizona.
And Yuma.
And Pima.
No, because Yuma is actually a huge county, and although the city of Yuma doesn't have that many, I believe the county of Yuma, Martine, you can fact check us on that, but I believe Yuma does have 250,000 people, or darn close.
I sit on a board with a couple judges that are, you know, subject to this particular proposition, and they're kind of nervous about it. I guess there's been an influx of money from out of state to fund this. What is the motivation here? I don't know. But they're, and it's weird because it's billed as if it's a good thing to have these lifetime people put in. Is this, do you think this is a party issue? What do you think? Because the Democrats tend to advocate for term limits.
I don't know if it's a party issue or not.
We're talking about Supreme Court nominees or appointees, right?
Yeah.
So maybe I have that opposite though.
Well, it's what it is people are backwards in their thinking, and I can read one comment that's published in this manual here that describes how backward the thinking is. So this is from Laura Kuby, state Senate candidate and Legislative District 8, former Tempe vice mayor. So this is what Lauren says. As I submit this ballot, I believe that I'm the only person in Arizona willing to submit a vote yes statement on Prop 137. Well, she's not, because there's another dozen summaries here of people that are advocating for that. So she's wrong right there.
Oopsie-daisy.
That should tell you something about the merits of the legislative referral, because none of the legislatures that referred this ballot measure are willing to tell you why they did it and why they think you should vote yes on this. I don't even know what she's saying there, but here are her arguments. They believe judges should have lifetime appointment with no accountability. This is despite the fact that lifetime appointment for judges at the U.S. Supreme Court have been a failure, undercutting our democracy and destroying reproductive rights. So apparently you're not able to reproduce, and you don't have the right to reproduce because judges have lifetime tenure in the Supreme Court. Again, I'm for term limits, but I don't see how at all that has anything to do with your right to reproduce. Oh, unless you're actually flipping the right to reproduce on its head and defining it rather as the right to kill the fetus in utero. So there's sarcasm there. They oppose abortion. They wrote the law specifically to try to keep abortion bans in place by removing any accountability or check on anti-abortion judges. Why? You are arguing that judges need more accountability, but you're voting yes that the term limits should be eliminated.
I don't understand.
This person is the biggest idiot, and yet they ascended to the ranks of vice mayor in Tempe. You want accountability. Term limits provide accountability. And what that has to do with the Supreme Court voting on your right to reproduce, I don't know.
Absolutely. And so, and she, what she's saying, you're using the term limits. And let's get it clear, like, term limits by definition mean when your term is over, it's over and you can't do any more. And that's not what we're talking about. In fact, the current system that we have for judicial officers is that they have a term. Sean already outlined that term, but that doesn't mean that they're termed out. They can't ever do it again. We as the voters have the ability to say, you know what, we like that judge and the way that they performed and held up their duties. So we're going to vote for them again and keep them as a judge because they're a good judge. Or we can say, no, they're horrible. They don't adhere to our Constitution, and we're not going to keep them in office. So they have a term limit, and every term when their term expires, then we have the ability to say, yeah, you can keep going or not. So that's the ultimate accountability of the people. And what she's advocating for is the opposite.
Yes.
Let's get rid of that system.
Let's get rid of terms.
Let's put a judge in, and they never have accountability. They will be there for life.
And that way, we can
go and
address the issue that we have at the Supreme Court, where it's lifetime tenure. It's like, it is honestly the complete opposite. So if you were to read these arguments and to agree with her, then you would vote yes to this, and you would eliminate the terms that are imposed on these judges.
So is it that she's dumb, or she absolutely knows what she's doing because she's trying to trick the public?
Well, that's a good question.
She's saying something. She's either, you want accountability, don't you? Then you need to vote yes on this when it's the opposite of that.
Right.
And people aren't smart enough to read the fine print.
Right. That you know what? That may be it. I wrote idiot right across the top of the page here because she is contradicting actually what the law would do. But maybe she's just evil and trying to con the people.
So if you vote yes on this, it says voters will no longer have the ability to decide whether to retain those judges at the end of their judicial terms.
Right.
Those judges would instead be subject to a retention election only if they were convicted of a felony or a crime involving fraud or dishonesty.
So we don't get any chance to vote on whether or not they stay in office unless this, it's going to be a committee that's put in place, researches their conduct and finds that they've committed a fraud or some type of felony.
Or they filed bankruptcy, or they've had a foreclosure on their mortgage.
Yeah.
Or didn't meet the judicial performance review standards.
The judicial performance review standards are the voters.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I think that's dishonest is really what it is. I don't think she's that dumb.
Okay.
I think she thinks we're dumb.
Probably.
Well, we're not.
We're not dumb.
Today. What's her name? Judy? What's her name?
Lauren. Today, Lauren. You're exposed.
Right here on this worldwide podcast radio show that nobody listens to.
Here is another one that it sounds good on its face, but it's actually really bad. So it's Prop 311. And what Prop 311 would do is it would require that counties that have more than 250,000 people. No, sorry, it doesn't have that requirement. It would require that first responders get paid $250,000 if they die in the line of duty.
Yeah.
And first responders, everybody loves first responders, right? Unless they're the police and there are Antifa riots, then you want to defund them. But most of the time, first responders, firefighters, ambulance or paramedics, police officers, they're the ones that protect us and help keep our children safe. So we want to make sure that they get the benefits that they need to continue doing that. That should come by way of their wages and not forcing that everybody gets $250,000 if something happens. Now, if they want $250,000, if they die, then there's life insurance and you can do that. So what it's doing is it's taking another chunk, another liberty out of the private market, and it's mandating that this payment be made for anybody that enrolls in this line of service. They already have the ability to do it. They chose that line of service. I appreciate that. But I don't want it pinned on me to pay their families if they die in the line of service. I want them to take responsibility as adults and get life insurance.
This reminds me of, so on its face, I don't want you to get the impression that we are not for first responders or, you know, officers, police. We are very much for that. However, this reminds me of that situation many years ago. Remember Davy Crockett?
Yes. In Tennessee? I just listened to that the other day. Yes.
Yeah, so tell the story.
So Davy Crockett was a congressperson.
Tennessee.
From Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And he was voting for a measure where there was a big portion of, I think it was either Washington, D.C. or New York. I can't remember. But anyways, a big portion of one of those cities had burned down. And they wanted to pay $20,000 to the victims of that fire. And Davy Crockett said, yeah, okay, let's vote for it. And so he voted for it. And then when he was running for re-election, he was back in his home district in Tennessee, and he asked for the support of a voter. And the individual said, no. Absolutely not. The moment you decided you can take my money and pay it to somebody else, regardless of, you know, what, how sympathetic their circumstances are, means that you are not keeping the Constitution, which means the government doesn't have the right to take private citizens' money and spend it however they see fit. If you, as congressmen and women and senators, would have donated a week's worth of your salary, you could have compensated those victims more than you actually gave them from taxpayer money. So you can't do that. You can't take taxpayer money to then be the hero and come to the rescue of victims of catastrophic events. We need to rely on other organizations, charitable organizations, or insurance, and decide in looking at the future in advance rather than taking money at force from the taxpayers and paying it to our pet projects and then claiming the crown as hero for doing so.
Yeah, so Prop 311 would have the effect of requiring the state of Arizona to pay $250,000, which would be referred to as the state death benefit, to the surviving spouse or children of a first responder killed in the line of duty. It would also create a new fund, a benefit fund, to pay this state benefit, you know, a death benefit. And how is that going to be funded? Taxpayer money, okay? So just like Sean mentioned before, but it'll also, they'll use $20. They'd also increase the criminal punishments for aggravated assaults against peace officers and other first responders and require a $20 penalty fee be imposed on every criminal conviction to fund the state supplemental benefit fund. I don't know if that's going to do it, you know? I don't know if this fund is going to fill up. You're talking $250,000 with $20 in the pot here and there.
From criminals that can get convicted of crimes. Yeah. Because we all know that criminals
against peace officers
are going to pay up all of the penalties that are imposed on them.
So I just, as I read through this one, my heart would go out to those victims. But like Sean said, you've got remedies in place. We don't need more remedies. Take my money or your money, your tax money, and then funnel it this other way in the name of charity. There are other mechanisms to get that done. And having even read through the whole thing when I was reading about this new fund, my first question is, well, how are they going to pay for that? It's going to be my money, number one. Number two, they say, well, we're going to create this fund. So it's okay. We're going to create this new fund. And the way that we're going to pay for this is through these $20 increments on these aggravated assaults against officers. Every time somebody's convicted of that, we're going to charge them $20.
Yeah.
You know, and that's going
to... Why would we allow the government to control more money for a fund that already exists out there in the private market? I don't see any reason for it. So vote no on that. That's Proposition 311.
Any other good juicy ones that you saw?
Of course. They're all good. But let me see which ones.
Okay,
I like
I've got one.
Okay.
You said 135?
Yeah.
Oh, I love this one. Actually, yeah. This one I voted yes for.
I did too.
Hot off the heels of a global pandemic where state by state we saw governors using emergency power that's granted to them through their constitution in that particular state. Arizona saw this as well, to lock us down and do particular things. What 135 is, this I feel like is a good one to vote yes on. This amends our constitution. So number one, my scrutiny is going to be heightened, you know. But then I ask myself, okay, so I'm looking at this through a lens of heightened scrutiny because it is very hard to undo. It's going to amend our constitution. Okay, so I'm already thinking no, but maybe if this is persuasive enough where it's limiting the government's power, or basically that, you know, then I might consider it. And that's exactly what's happening here. So if you vote yes on 135, that would have the effect of amending the Arizona Constitution to automatically terminate any emergency powers granted to the governor 30 days after the date the state of emergency was proclaimed, unless the legislature extends the emergency powers granted to the governor or the emergency relates to war, fire, or flood. If the legislature does not extend the emergency, the governor may not declare a new state of emergency arising under the same conditions. Additionally, if requested by at least one-third of the members of each house of the legislature, the governor must promptly call a special session for the purposes of terminating or altering the emergency powers granted to the governor during the state of emergency.
So they could terminate it prior to 30 days.
Yeah. Yep, exactly right. So what do you think is going on here?
So we saw this in the COVID epidemic where gyms were shut down, yet other places,
bars,
tattoo parlors were left open. And the governor was allowing for the prosecution of these gym owners, of these churches that were allowed to stay open, or that weren't allowed to stay open under the epidemic because they deemed in their, you know, ultimate capacity that they were not essential, right? Essential businesses. And that was ridiculous. They had tubing down the river was no longer permitted because that was going to be too risky. And what we saw was it was very arbitrary. The governor, the politicians, the media, they picked their pet projects to allow these businesses to keep open, and other businesses went bankrupt because they were closed. And this went unchecked for months upon months. Originally, it was 3 weeks, right? Shut down for 3 weeks or 2 weeks to stop the slow or slow the spread. And it went on for a long, long time. This is 30 days. You get, if you see a state of emergency, you get 30 days to exercise your power of governor to try to get things straight. And if at 30 days you haven't gotten it straight, the people got to figure out how to get it straight themselves, unless the legislature goes in and extends it for 30 days at a time. And if we don't think it's a severe enough emergency, then the legislature, just by one third of each body of the state legislature, then they can call an end to the state of emergency.
Yeah, and it doesn't apply to war, fire, or flood. So I think those are good carve-outs. What do you think?
I think it should apply to everything, but I'll take what I can get.
Fire, flood. I mean, why would you need more than 30 days to deal with that?
Right.
War, I could see. But then you could also see them twisting that, you know. Well, we're going to declare war, or we're going to...
A war on terrorism.
Yeah, exactly.
It's war never on crime.
Ending. Sure. So I don't know. You're saying, well, it doesn't go far enough. Well, I think this is good enough to start with.
And yeah.
We can amend it. The problem is this is a constitutional amendment, so...
But it's a constitutional amendment that actually pulls back some rights of the government and gives it back to the people.
Absolutely. Yeah. For that reason, I'm voting yes. So that was 135. I think that's all the time we have for today. But we will be back next week. Sean, any final words?
Read the proposition. If not, I guess we can run down our list. If you want a quick, easy summary of what we would vote for, Proposition 133. No.
I put no.
Proposition 134. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Proposition 135.
Yes.
Yes. Proposition 136.
No.
Yes.
I put no on that one.
That's
the one where you and I disagreed, which is the, what is this? Oh, the lawsuit 100 days before.
Yeah.
Something maybe being unconstitutional.
Right.
Okay.
Proposition 137.
I put no.
No. We don't want to eliminate terms on the judges that are serving. Proposition 138, yes, we do want to allow the restaurant owners to pay 25% less than the minimum wage because tips are going to make up the difference. Proposition 139 is a constitutional right to abortion. No.
I put no on that. And then Proposition 140, this is candidates. We didn't really go over this one.
No.
I put no.
So it's basically whether or not initiative petition related election. Oh, it's in order to get initiative on the ballot, it requires 10%.
No, that's not this one.
That's not it?
No, this one is like a vote for yes on this would have the effect of allowing all eligible voters to vote for any primary election candidate.
Oh.
Okay,
so it's the open primaries.
This is actually controversial.
Yeah.
Because what we've seen in the past is I can register as any party that I want, but still, in some states, you can still get the full ballot.
The slate of the primaries. Like right now, in the primaries, if I'm registered Republican, I can only vote for the people that are running as Republicans.
Right.
If I'm registered as independent, then I can vote for both Republicans and Democratic candidates.
So why would you want this to go in place?
Why would
other than nefarious purposes?
Because I don't want to align with one party. I do on most issues, but I don't want to be trapped within those boundaries. I want to be able to vote in the primaries for anybody that's running.
So you can do that. I'm registered as independent because I want all my options available.
Right.
And so when I get my ballot, I have everything on there. And I get to choose between Democrat, Green, Republican. If you register as Republican, you just get that slate of Republicans. Mm-hmm. And if you do Democrat, then you only get the Democratic slate.
And most people will register where they lean toward. But they want to preserve their right to vote for the most qualified candidate, even if it's not the party that they're registered with. And that's why I like that.
I hear you. I just think this is more of a, is this amending the Constitution?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. So it's already got that heightened scrutiny, number one. Number two, I see this as a nefarious play at individuals being able to...
Because what's happened in other states is the Democrats fund the weaker party, the weaker candidate of the opposing party, and they want that candidate. So let's say that we've got a candidate on the Democrat side, two candidates running against one another, and one of them is, you know, got some skeletons in the closet. It's going to be a very easy candidate to defeat in the general election. So you could go as a Republican and you could vote that you want them to be the candidate in the for the Democratic ticket. And then they got less likely of a chance to win against your Republican nominee. But you're going to give up your vote for the Republican nominee that you want to have there. So you can only get vote for one. You can't vote for two people. Mm-hmm. So, but people have done that in other states and try to put the weaker candidate forward of the opposing party. So that is, you know, it's playing games with the system. But if you want to throw your vote that way, then so be it. I say allow people to vote for whoever it is in the primaries.
I think it's a way for, so you could register as Republican and still vote Democrat. What would be the advantage of doing that?
To throw off
the system?
Well, no, I don't want
the metrics.
No, I think that just on an honest approach.
I'm saying a dishonest person.
Yes, you would
because
vote
that's
for
what
the,
we see in
you
other
would
states.
Vote for the weaker Democratic candidate. So you would have an easier race for your Republican candidate that you actually wanted to win, but you didn't get the opportunity to vote for in the primaries because you think the other constituents, other Republicans, are going to vote for them to get them through the primaries.
But you're registering as the opposite of what you want.
No, you're not registering. The idea here is you don't have to. You can be of any party registered. It's an open primary.
Yes, I understand that. Right now, the way we have it is whatever you're registered, that's what you're going to vote.
Yes.
So what would be the reasoning for in other states, what we've seen is this being used to the disadvantage of the other party. So if I'm a Democrat, I'm going to register as Republican but still vote Democrat.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Well, because maybe you actually want that person.
Besides that, I doubt that's the reason why.
I don't. Well,
that's
okay.
Nice of you.
Okay, go ahead.
But what does that do other than just throw off polling numbers and things like that? You know, there's been an influx of these Republicans, let's say, in Pennsylvania.
I think that sometimes there are bad candidates that are in the Republican Party, and I don't want them to be on the ticket. I'd rather the best Democrat opposition be on the ticket, and I want to vote for that Democrat in the general.
Yeah. I think you would just register as independent. So there's already a remedy to that, and I don't think it needs to be baked into our Constitution.
Okay.
But that's just my opinion.
Okay.
I voted no on this. I don't know what you did.
I voted yes.
Oh.
So it's split.
Yeah. I was kind of on the fence, like, okay, what's the matter? I do like the idea of getting all these things without having to choose Republican, independent, or Democrat. But, you know, this is who I am, and that's the ballot I want. I like that idea, but at the same time, I'm like, I don't think it needs to be put forth in the Constitution. I think a statute would get that done.
Right.
And also, if I want all of them, I just register as independent. So there's already a way to do it. This is just, again, more laws or, I don't know.
Okay. So Proposition 311 is first responders.
We talked about that one.
We think that they should get their own insurance, so no on that. 312 is relating to property tax and the vote that's required for that. I voted yes for that.
I voted yes on that.
Proposition 313 refers to child sex trafficking. It enhances the penalty, the criminal penalties.
I actually voted no on this.
This
is a controversial one,
yeah,
too,
it
probably.
Is controversial. I voted yes on that. I got no sympathy for child sex traffickers or anybody that abuses children. So the penalties are severe, and I think that with the open border that we have right now, we've had 300,000 children put into sex trafficking in the last year because of the open border. And so I think put them in jail, throw away the key, and that's basically what this proposition says.
Yeah, I don't think it's that black and white. I mean, we've seen through the judicial system bad things happening and bad facts being presented or bad activist judges. The way it is right now, that can still be a possibility, meaning prison for life, no parole. That's on the table. It starts at 7 years prison,
yeah, right?
You know, and then so there's a sliding scale. I think it needs to be. I want to believe that
give more judicial discretion?
Yeah, I want to leave that up to the judges and when they're doing the sentencing, because there might be cases that don't want, this reads to me like strict liability. Strict liability is a term of art that we use in the legal field to say, if you do this, you have no choice, judge. You have to give them life in prison.
An example is, your dog bites somebody, you're liable, 100%. Doesn't matter the circumstances. Your dog bit somebody else, you're liable. That's strict liability.
Or an 18-year-old has sex with a 17-year-old or 16-year-old. That could be rape. You know,
it's called statutory rape because even if they're both consenting under the statute, it's illegal because a 17-year-old can't consent. So it's only rape by virtue of statute.
And so we've seen that play out in our society over the last few decades, you know, and it tends to be, it's more nuanced than that.
Yeah.
Now, is sex trafficking that nuanced? Maybe. It might be.
I don't see any nuance in it, but okay.
That's because we haven't looked at the particular facts. It's very fact-based.
Okay.
It might be a person that I allege you're a sex trafficker, and now you're going to go through this trial, and you get convicted of that, and you had nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. So that can happen.
Yeah, that's true.
So I want the judge to be able to have that sliding scale and leave it up to judicial discretion. So I said
okay.
No on that.
Okay.
Even though this is one that pulls on your heartstrings right off the bat.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I hate sex traffickers. Yes. You know, well, it's a lot more nuanced, in my opinion, than that.
So Proposition 314 also relates to the border, and it actually gives authorities here in the state the right to enforce the border laws, which is if somebody crosses the border illegally, they can be arrested and they can be criminally prosecuted.
Absolutely. So this is completely unconstitutional. Let's just be clear. This is unconstitutional.
Yeah.
Arizona cannot do this, but we're going
to
do it.
Yeah. I like it. I want to do it, and I want it to go to the Supreme Court, and I want to get the media attention that the federal government should be stepping up and doing their job of securing our border.
Yeah, so the reason I'm saying it's unconstitutional is because the Supreme Court has already said in the past, if we're going to go off of stare decisis, and maybe this might be constitutional now with this court makeup, mm-hmm. but stare decisis would say that this is unconstitutional. The federal government has exclusive authority over the border and its control. And so this would not probably be held as constitutional right now.
So, but I could see that there could be an argument for it because we're not saying we're going to go to the border and push them back. We're saying once you're in our state, if you don't show documentation and prove that you are here legally, and we can show the contrary, that you passed into our state illegally, then you can be criminally prosecuted. There was an attempt for this back with Sheriff, what was his name? Arpaio? Yeah. And he really went forward with this. And there was another proposition, I forget, it was like 210 or something like that, that got passed, and it was very similar to this. And so they were basically putting a lot of people that were undocumented in jail and saying, if you're not here legally, then you're criminals. And there was a lot of backlash from that.
Yeah, I think it was the identification thing. If you get stopped, you have to prove you're a citizen.
Yeah, which I don't like the whole, I don't like giving the police the power to stop you and require identification. I don't think that you should have to carry identification on you. But if they can prove that you crossed through any, it says if you cross through any unauthorized
checkpoint, basically. So basically what this says, a yes vote would have the effect of creating new crimes regarding the following conduct by any person not lawfully present in the United States. Number one, applying for public benefit by submitting a false document.
So it's not like you're stopping people in the street. People are proactively trying to milk the government welfare system.
So what we just described as Sheriff Joe and the ID thing, that is not what this is. This is different.
Yeah.
This is, you're trying to get benefits by using false documents or documentation. Number two, submitting false information to an employer regarding the person's authorization to work in the United States. Number three, entering Arizona from a foreign country at any location other than a lawful port of entry.
That's what you're talking about.
Number four, refusing to comply with a court order to return to the person's country of origin or entry. So those last two are the ones that would teeter on unconstitutional, in my opinion. Because what's happening right now is people are coming across the border. The Border Patrol is like, okay, here's a hotel. taxpayer funded. Here you go. Stay in a hotel on us. Here's your cell phone. Here's your walking around money. And they're giving them all these goodies that you and I are paying for. And they're like, and here's your court date. Come back on this date and you'll be, you know, dealt with then. And then they never come back. So that last one is saying, if you've been issued a court order to return to that hearing, then you're going to be subject to us booting you out, basically. So the remedies here, if you violate any of those things, which it also says also creates a new crime for selling fentanyl that causes the death of another person. I'm like, just fentanyl?
I get that. There are some stupid things that they threw in there along with it.
Yeah, but I'm like, okay, it's good enough. We'll say yes on this. I mean, but in my mind, it's like there's a lot more killing people. It could be anything, you know? So, that's all the time we have for today. This is Life, Death, and Law. We'll talk to you next week.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit yumaestateplanning.com.
Want to hear more Life, Death, and the Law? You can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, or any other platform you listen to your podcasts.